Hi, I'm Shane Twist and welcome to Behind the Beef, a podcast that gives you a look behind the scenes and into the everyday activities of the people behind the beef. In today's episode of Behind the Beef, Angus Australia's extension manager, Jake Phillips, is taking the lead. In March, he had the opportunity to visit the Northern Territory and attend the Northern Territory Cattlemen's Association's 40th annual conference, which took place in Alice Springs. In today's episode, we have a series of interviews hosted by Jake with producers who are utilising Angus and Angus-influenced genetics in the Territory. We were joined by Ted Fogarty of Palmer Valley Station, Dylan Wall, manager of Consolidated Pastoral Company's Bunda Station, and Lee Knoth of Waite River Station. Chatting with Jake both on property and at the conference, each producer has given a snapshot of their use of Angus and Angus-influenced genetics in Northern Australia. A big thanks to those who spoke to us of their experiences and to Jake for being our man on the ground. So let's jump into those chats now.
Hi, I'm Ted Fogarty from Palmer Valley Station. We live about 150 km south of Alice Springs on the Stuart Highway. Yeah, we're sort of semi-desert country, not heavy stock areas. Got about just a bit under a million acres and run about 3,000 breeders, you know, at full capacity to be comfortable. And if the season allows you to do that.
Ted, so talking about the seasons, what are your seasons like in the area and what does an average year look like for you?
Well, this year it's only just average, but you know, we've still got a couple of good months to go. Hopefully you get a bit of rain the next couple of months and it make things really good. Our average rainfall is around about 6 inches. A lot of times we don't get it, but you know, our season this year, I wouldn't say it's great, but it's we'll survive and I hope we get a bit more rain through the next coming months.
So Ted, what is your background and how long have you been in the beef industry for?
I've been in the industry since I was left school at 13 and on our family place northeast of Alice. And then when we all split up, I come down here and started at Palmer Valley. My wife, I met her in Alice Springs probably about 40 years ago. And we started at Lucy Creek and then come across here and we've sort of been here for probably 30 years. Four children, one girl's and her partner runs Palmer Valley, and the other one's in the New England, she runs them properties, and there's one a school teacher, and Benny just finished his heavy diesel mechanic.
So on Palmer Valley, what is the Palmer Valley business in the beef industry and how does it operate?
Palmer Valley is an Angus operation, and yeah, we've sort of been doing that for the last 20 years at least, full Angus for the organic market mainly. We started out with Brahmins, but they are wild and, you know, a bit of everything, but Brahmin content, and we tried to clean them up and we were getting no money from after a little bit, and so we sort of stuck with the Brahmins for the first couple of years until our opportunity to go Angus. We sort of went to the blacks with the organic market and we thought that was the best way to go. We're one of the first to do that, the organic market, and you know, we thought we'd follow, we believed in them and followed them, and yeah, and it worked out pretty good. There's Angus around us and it's soft country, so Angus will handle it pretty good. It's not like, you know, further north you go, you get into the Brahmin or Bos Indicus breeds. Buffalo grass is probably the main thing in the central Australia for most places. And I think it's good. It's sort of made a lot of country. People don't like it, but you know, for us, it's definitely made a lot of this desert country. Yeah, if you let them on it, they will eat it first. And it's the first to grow. There's other grasses here, but yeah, buffalo grass on an average is pretty good.
So when we were talking before, Ted, the properties at Tamworth, Is that part of Palmer Valley or is that separate? Or
yeah, it was definitely when we were, you know, before the kids come into it and the drought, we sort of had, this is a breeding operation, and in New South Wales, in the New England, that was the fattening with our steers, and then we send them to the organic processors over there. So, you know, it worked really good. Mm.
So how have you utilised Angus genetics in your herd? How did you bring them in?
Well, we just started with bulls first and just crossed them with the Brahman cows, crossbred cows, and we just kept, you know, anything that was black we kept, and we just kept culling the Brahmins out as they got older. And yeah, and actually they turned out to a pretty nice herd, you know, after, you know, a fair few years, and then the drought hit us and then we had to get rid of most of it, so we had to start again. But that's what you dealt with. Why I picked Angus, it's a market, you know, you can sell them anywhere in Australia, and they're good cattle to deal with. All the genetics we've got, we've had good cattle, they're good and quiet, they're easy to deal with. You know, you drive around, they don't run away, they're there, you know, we've never had no problem with them. They're just good cattle to deal with, and, you know, and they work in both places here in the New England, like the Angus can handle the cold and handle the heat.
So when it comes to your herd, are there any particular management practices or selection criteria that you use to meet your objective?
Yeah, we sort of go through it. You know, on our EBV, there's probably about four things on your EBVs that you really target, and the rest of it, you know, just doesn't really matter. But our main thing is birth weight is in this area, because, you know, you're not there watching them every day. You know, you might see them every couple of months, and you don't want them to, you know, lose their calf or jam up, so you sort of don't go for the big birth weights. That's probably the main thing on everything. And the rest of it, you know, we sort of work on it a bit, but we don't get really serious on it. You don't really want a high milk. They put out a lot in the milk and they die a lot, die quick, you know, from feeding their calf all the time. And, you know, the Herefords, you know, they sort of shut down, and so do the Angus do if it starts to get pretty dry. Sort of try and keep themselves going, and like they dry out more or less.
Ted, can you explain to us about your joining period here in Palmer Valley?
Well, we haven't really got a pattern of joining, and the reason why, you know, our rainfall is, we can get it any month. We don't try and make a set joining because it's so dry, and like you put them out and have them there for 8 weeks. Well, you know, sometimes it doesn't even work. So we just leave them in there and do two musters a year, and you know, it still works. But yeah, three bulls to 100 cows.
Yep.
Just on your season, it's hopefully we sort of work from 75 to 85%, you know, in that mark. Like, you know, over your two brandings, you sort of, you know, you work out, and it's usually in that mark. Just depends where your herd's back again. Like if it's, you know, coming back pretty good, well, you cull them pretty hard, as even your black ballies, you know, you cull a few of them out. And, you know, cows that aren't doing real, you know, or nice cows or on looks, and, you know, dry cows, you sort of target them a bit. But you've got to be a bit careful, but you wean them twice a year. So we've got a preg testing thing here. So the daughters and that, they preg test and check them, and they're onto that pretty good now.
Ted, can you just tell us a bit about your bull sourcing strategy, where you've got, you were saying before, you buy a few bulls, but you also breed a few bulls out of your own. Yeah. Owned cows. So can you tell us a bit about your bull sourcing strategy?
Well, usually I try and talk to the producers too and get their views on it. The people that sell them, you know, you sort of try and talk to them and see what they reckon is good quality, and they talk us through it a bit and what they like and then what you like. And yeah, you know, we go through all the EBVs with what we know. Not that we know, you know, too much about that stuff, but try and learn as much as we can.
And so you're buying some bulls, but you're also breeding some bulls, so you can tell
me. Yeah, well, at the moment we sort of just buy bulls for the stud herd, and then the rest of them come through the what we breed, and then bring them up here as 12 months old.
Paint the picture for me about how you bring your bulls to Palmer Valley. So what does that look like? How do you transition them?
Well, we got a B double, and a lot of times we double decker. We just got trucks ourselves and go down, pick up, the bulls, and we bring a load of hay back on the way back. Well, I got a hay farm down in New South Wales. Bring hay back and bring the bulls back. You're allowed to bring two trailers, so you have a trailer load of hay and trailer load of bulls. We sort of keep them around here for at least 8 weeks, and then we sort of set area up so you can actually walk through our trapping systems, and they walk in and out of these trapping systems around here close, and we sort of set it up, make it so you got put more arms in your traps, so they, by the time they go out, if they do wander, well, they used to traps, they're not hanging around the waters perishing, or they're all used to that before you let them go. But even where you do let them go, you open your spears up so they can actually walk in fairly easy without the spears touching them, and they get used to that pretty quick, and then they're just like the rest of the herd then.
And what type of Angus bulls do you find you have the most success with?
Usually I like to get them here about anywhere between 12 and 15 months. That's ideal sort of. And if they're a bit younger, it doesn't really matter, but you sort of just got to have them, on good feed when you get here, and try and avoid the summer if you can. Why? Because it's 40 degrees and they're not used to it. They just can't get used to it. Like, it's like people, you bring people up here, you take them out and work them, like, you got to be careful if they don't dehydrate. They're not used to it. They come from the south or somewhere, it's cool, cold weather. Then they come up to that, and it's just, you're better off bringing them up, March, April. Then they sort of get used to all the winter, and then they come into the summer, and they just, you don't even know that, they don't even know it then. I like the shinier coat fellas, the shorter coated fellas, because, it's better for the heat. If they're, pretty woolly looking fella, I sort of dodge them if I can a bit. Especially a real thick woolly fella, he'll carry that a bit longer, and he's knock up quicker. When you travel with them and you're walking them anywhere, they're the first to knock up.
Is there anything that you're testing your bulls for?
Just semen, just make the oil fertile, and we test all that stuff.
So tell us about your cattle turnoff. You sort of said you're an organic producer, but what's your target for your calves you're selling?
We sort of target wherever the market is at the time. The last couple of years, you've been getting weaners, turning them off between $15,000 and $2,000, that's where we are at. Why would you hold them for any longer? And now it's sort of come back, and we just sort of grow them out a bit bigger, and they still make good money when they're growing up a bit, but the smaller cattle aren't as making as much, so wherever the market is on the day, we sort of target that. We try and work to the feedlot types. If the seeding's, if it's good and they're making good money, well, you quit them, and then it's saving your country and saving it for something else later in the year. If you can quit all your weaners, and then all your country has a spell and you can still do something different then.
What are some of the challenges you experience in your business at the moment?
Feral dogs, that's probably a big challenge. You get a lot of that, and a lot of people don't like trying to control it. A lot of neighbours and that, they don't reckon that's first priority, and I think that's one of the first priorities for us, because if there's a lot of dogs and you lose, 5 calves a week, that's a lot of calves over 12 months. You try and control that as much as you can. And your feral camels, that's probably another problem. And they're probably our ferals here anyway, but there's other ferals, in other places, but that's our main ferals.
And what are some of the biggest opportunities you think at the moment?
The opportunities, you've got something that's pretty hard to get now. That's probably the biggest opportunity. Try and get into these places if you're a family-owned business. They cost a lot of money now.
Do you have any kind of longer-term goals for Palmer Valley, or is there anything in the future you're looking forward to?
I've sort of got out of it a bit and let my kids have a go at it. The next generation coming into it, and hope they can make a go of it. And my daughter and her partner run it now, Jade and Rory. And they've sort of been here for nearly 2 years, and they're doing a good job. And they're probably a bit more into the genetic side than I am, and you know, I'm sort of getting out of it a bit. So, yeah, and one of my other daughters in the New England, she's getting right into it. You know, they go to a lot of these cinemas and that.
What's something that you know now that you wish you did when you started out?
Keep going forward, and you know, I just sort of keep trying to get better with it. And like, you got to crawl before you can walk. Yeah, well, I would have got into Angus sooner, but it's just what was here when we bought it, and like the market didn't allow you to change. You know, we had Hereford at Lucy Creek anyway, and we were bringing them across, and we were all in the same company then. So you know, really, we, you know, I probably would have got the Hereford and then put Angus over them. Probably would have had a lot of black bullies, but when we couldn't get rid of the Brahmins and that for a fair while, so we just went with the Brahmins for a while and bought Brahmin bulls, and yeah, that's where we were for probably the first 7 or 8 years before we started to go back onto the Angus side of it.
So, two questions for you. What do you think the biggest milestone has been for Palmer Valley since you've been? What's the biggest achievement you've had, you think?
Oh, well, like, you know, I started from Palmer Valley and I've got 4 places now, so, and like, yeah, if I fell off the perch, all my kids would have a place each. That's what my parents done to us, and I've done it to them. So I hope they can do it to theirs.
So in this industry, Ted, who's been your biggest mentor in this, what you're doing?
Probably my father. Yeah, no, he'd gone a long way from, you know, what he started from. He started with nothing, and no doubt we helped him along the way, but he had a great start for all of us, you know, when we started, and we just kept making it work.
Two more questions, then we'll let you go.
You said that half an hour ago.
If you had your time again, would you do anything differently?
Not really. Like, you know, we were in a good era. Like when we were young, you know, we were all horses and no motorbike, no thing, and like it was hard and hard work. Well, we didn't know any different, so we just done it. Kept us out off the streets.
And why do you think working in the beef industry is a good place or a good thing to do? Why do you enjoy it?
What you see around you and what you build and what you make of it, you think, well, yeah, you've done something right.
Welcome back to Man on the Street at the NTCA 40th Anniversary Conference. We're joined by Dylan Wall from Consolidated Pastoral Company here this morning. Dylan, do you want to give us just a bit of an overview of what you do in CPC, where you are, and you know, why you're here sort of thing?
Yep. Yeah, right. So, yeah, we're at Bunda Station down on the Buntine Highway, just up against the NTWA border. We run a cattle station there. Obviously, we have 25,000 head of breeders, and then we've got a 2,500 head stud there, a multiplier stud. So we're fed in from our stud in Queensland, Alloa, and also get some feedables and that from Nimblewimba down on the Sunshine Coast. Yeah, man.
Yep. So, do you want to just walk us through, you know, being a multiplier stud? What does that look like in terms of the whole business? What piece of the puzzle are you playing?
Yep. Yeah, so with the multiplier stud, because, well, you know, good bulls are really expensive and that, so we try with our genetics to really build them up down there at Alloa, and then Newcastle and us get fed those genetics in, and then our stud then, you know, steps it down a little bit into our commercial herd so that we're not spending, you know, we'd probably breed 800-900 bulls a year, so we're able to do that a little bit cheaper, but still try not lose that genetic advantage, I guess, is the main thing.
And is there advantages of those bulls being raised in your country? Like, do you see that as a strategy that you're trying to do as opposed to bringing them in?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. They did, prior to my time, yeah, there was a few issues with buying really good bulls and sending them up, and they, you know, they'd grown up down south and then hit the heat and just didn't perform or handle it as well. So, yeah, that's definitely a big one for that.
Yeah, so generally, and we'll get onto the breeds in a moment, but generally, what type of cattle or traits are you sort of trying to work with, I suppose? What's the aim of the breeding program?
Yeah, so I guess the main one, especially for CBC, is fertility. That's by far the biggest. You know, we can go through and select for the other traits, but fertility was where we were lacking and where we're really pushing. And we've gone a long way in the last, 10 years. That's the main thing, which goes into the Angus.
Yeah, righto. So What breeds, I suppose, are you working with at the moment, and how do you fold each one of those into the composite that you're trying to get to?
Yeah. So we've got Brangus is our biggest line, but to get the Brangus, we start off with a Brahman herd, which Bunda already had from Reg Underwood's day, and then getting a lot of Angus bulls in over them. And then now we're getting the Brangus bulls in as well as to our Brangus heifers that we're breeding. We've also got a line of Angus cows there that are crossed with the Baran bull. And then we've got some composite cows there playing with the Catherine DPI bulls that they've been breeding, trying to get that fertility and that hybrid vigor keep crossing over.
Yep. So I suppose why are you using each of those breeds? Is it fertility in Angus, or where does what piece of the pie are you using those for?
Yeah. It's definitely the fertility in the Angus. It's the tick resistance in the Brahman and that northern tropical. Because of where we still feed a lot into Indonesia, they do still prefer that Brahman sort of style. So getting that 50-50 or that 75, they're still looking for that a bit, even with our own feedlots. But you can't argue with the weight gains on the Angus in that. So that's why we're still trying to push that in there and change that culture over there a bit too.
So that was my next question, I suppose. What do you physically see as the manager? You know, you're running these breeds and composites side by side.
Yep.
What do you see on a daily basis with what they're doing and performing for you?
Yeah, definitely the fertility, like our calving percentage now is going up nearly 10% since I started at Bunda as a ringer. Where definitely the calving ease and the weight on the calves at weaning. We're also, I think definitely we touched on it, but that breeding them up there is really helping, that bit slicker coat that we can get into them. Even getting the Angus bulls that we buy and that up as a yearling bull, we do lose a couple in the semen testing, but they handle it heaps better, so doing that.
So you just touched on it then, but like you're running those 20-odd Angus cows, those elite cows and bringing up bulls, do you have to do anything differently? Like from when they arrive and you crack the door on the truck, like just paint the picture, what does that next few months look like in terms of getting them ready?
Yeah, not overly. We control mate, you need to do it with your stud. Not overly, we keep a bit of lick in front of them. Our country is very phosphorus deficient, so that is a massive lick program. They're never without phos in front of them, either block or loose. The cows, these Angus cows, there was a lot more, and we've culled them out. If they don't get in calf, if they're a bit behind, and keep it. And these 20 are just, they're the smick. They're fat all year. Admittedly, I've been there in some really good years, but they're still there even through the dry years for my predecessor. And these girls are the be all end all for that country.
Yeah, right. That's great. And you got a bit of a contingent from CPC here at the NTCA conference. How many of you are here and who's come, and what are you sort of hoping to get out of it?
So we're a bit behind this year. We'd normally have a few more, but with the weather and the event. But we've got Henry Burke, our GM, so he's just taken on the presence here, the NTCA. We've got Andrew and Anna Cochran. They're the Newcastle managers. They've just come up from ISIS, and they're really good. So they had the Angus stud down at ISIS when it was still there, and then it's moved up. They've got a 12,000 head stud at Newcastle. Then we've got Jeremy and Kate, or Jeremy Scott and Kate Murphy. They're from Dungown. It's a station next door to Newcastle. And then we've got Annabelle Keith. She's just come on as a, I think, data analyst. I'm not quite sure on that one. So and we're just down here, just interacting with everyone, seeing what's available, chatting to people like yourself, and just networking's a big one.
Yep. And why do you work in the beef industry?
Grew up in it. And I think there's a lot of really good people in the beef industry. Like, you never have to deal with anyone that doesn't want to be in it, I think. And that's my, I've spent time growing up down south, and I know I don't like Mundjeri people. So I think the beef industry is just a great culture and great small people.
Yep. And most important question of the day, how do you like your steak?
Yeah, I'm medium well.
Medium well. So. Fair enough. Very good. Well, thanks, Dylan, for joining us, and all the best, and might see you at beef or somewhere else.
That'd be good. Yeah.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Back for another episode of Woman on the Street at the NTCA conference. But pleased to have Lee from Wait River Station here with us this morning. Lee, tell us a bit about what you do. What's Wait River Station? Where is it? And how did you get here?
Yeah. G'day, I'm Lee Kunos from Wait River. We live 250 k's northeast of Alice Springs, and we come to the NTCA, have a look around and see what's different and just see what's happening in the industry.
So tell us, Lake River Station, how did you come to have cattle there and what have you been doing there and what are you doing now?
So we got the lease about 6 years ago on Waite River because we come from the cattle background, so that's what we wanted to do, run our own show. And me and my husband were running it for about 4 years, and then obviously like he passed away, so now me and my kids run it, and we've got to do the day-to-day to everything and run all our cattle and look after waters and
So what did you start with at Waite River?
Started with 200 of Lindervale black heifers and some Millwheeler ultra black bulls. Yeah, that's what we started off, and we've just built our herd from there. But we've kind of, because the prices got dearer with the black cattle, we had to go Brahmins to try and, because they were a bit cheaper at the time, to breed in our black calves. And
so why did you choose to bring the Angus females into the station?
I think at the time that, I don't know, like it was just a choice from my husband. He was like, I want to do something different. I want to go different and go black cattle. So
And how do you find the calves? Like, how's the cross working out for you?
Actually really good. They're good, big, thick set calves. So yeah, we actually, I'm quite pleased of how they come out,
And do you have to do anything differently, like with your Angus cattle, or they adapt pretty well, or how do you sort of handle that?
No, they adapt really well. That's what I was quite surprised thinking black cattle, you know, and I originally come from down south thinking that they would struggle up here, but they don't. They adapt really well to our country.
And any future plans or goals for Waite River, or what's on the horizon?
My plan is to get rid of all the Brahmins and just have black. That's our plan to get to, like, have black cattle. So yeah, that's our plan, but you know, everything takes time and we're getting there slowly. So yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for that.
Yep.
And that brings us to the end of today's episode. Thanks again to our guests for sharing about their operations and to our listeners for tuning in for another one. If you're interested in using Angus genetics in Northern Australia, Angus Australia has a suite of resources designed to assist producers with these breeding objectives. The Northern Focus website location, accessed via the menu on the Angus Australia homepage, is your stop for all things resources, case studies and protocols to assist in the increased utilisation of Angus and Angus-influenced cattle and genetics in northern cattle herds. If you'd like to know more or speak to an Angus Australia staff member, please contact the Angus Australia office. For those also attending Beef Australia and would like to speak to an Angus Australia staff member regarding Angus genetics in the north, Angus Australia will once again have stands E1 to E3 in the Exhibition Hall at Beef Australia with staff on hand to answer any of your burning questions. The World Angus Forum will also be on display opposite Angus Australia on stand E46 to help you make plans for the World Angus Forum in 2025. And that's all we have time for. As always, make sure you follow and subscribe to Behind the Beef and leave a 5-star rating or review. And follow and like Angus Australia and Angus Youth Australia on Facebook, X, Instagram and LinkedIn. Thanks again, and we'll catch you on the next one.